This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. For over 15 years, the IBM Center for the Business of Government has sought to connect research to practice, engaging authors and academics who in their research and studies contributed in some form or fashion to changing the way government does business. It started two decades ago with CompStat in the New York City Police Department and quickly jumped to police agencies across the world, as well as to other agencies within New York City. It was adapted by Baltimore, which created CityStat, the first application of this leadership strategy to an entire jurisdiction. Today, governments at all levels employ PerformanceStat, a focused effort by public executives to exploit the power of purpose and motivation, responsibility and discretion, data and meetings, analysis and learning, feedback and follow-up, all to improve government's performance. What is PerformanceStat? How is PerformanceStat a leadership strategy for producing results? And what are the core leadership principles and key operational components of this leadership strategy? Today we'll explore these questions and much more with Professor Bob Bain of the Kennedy School at Harvard University and author of The PerformanceStat Potential, a leadership strategy for producing results. Professor Bain is also an author of two IBM Center reports, one on Baltimore CityStat and another, Performance Leadership, 11 Better Practices That Can Ratchet Up Performance. Professor Bain, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate your taking the time to take a look at this book.
So, Professor Bain, before we delve into specifics about your recently released book, The PerformanceStat Potential, a Leadership Strategy for Producing Results, I'd like to better understand some key terms. Would you define for us, what is PerformanceStat?
Well, it's a very complicated thing, so let me give you some specific components of it. First of all, I want to emphasize it's not a system, it's not a model, it's a leadership strategy. And it's not just performance measurement either. In fact, I use the phrase performance leadership precisely because too many people use performance management and performance measurement interchangeably, as if you do the measurement, the management stuff automatically happens. So it's a leadership strategy designed to achieve specific public purposes by producing specific results. That is, there's some defined results that we're trying to produce. Why? Because we have a purpose in mind. Then there's the question of, well, what do we do to make that happen? Well, one thing that we do is we have a series of regular integrated meetings in which we discuss what's going well, what's not, based on current data, try to identify specific problems, try to figure out what's causing those problems, and then try to develop some strategies that we can experiment with that might help us solve that particular problem. Those meetings include follow-up from previous discussions. They include feedback from particular progress that we've made, and they always are trying to figure out, well, what's the next performance deficit we have to fix? What is the target we should have for that one?
And your book, The PerformanceStat Potential, does a wonderful job in the initial couple of chapters of providing a good historical context on what it is. So would you give us a brief overview of the history and genesis of the PerformanceStat's progeny? What prompted the move in this direction, and how does it help public agencies actually produce results?
Well, it starts in New York City Police Department in January of 1994. Rudy Giuliani has been elected mayor in November of 1993. He campaigned on the key platform of reducing crime in New York City. He hires Bill Bratton to be his police commissioner. Bratton comes in, hooks up with his old buddy from before, Jack Maple, and they create this thing that they call CompStat, in which it pays attention to crime and tries to reduce crime in particular areas. They have a series of meetings with the precinct commanders and the borough commanders in the city, trying to identify problems, trying to identify strategies that will reduce crime of particular types in particular areas. Then other police departments copied the same strategy, used it to reduce crime. And then other agencies in New York City that had nothing to do with crime or policing began to think about it as well. The Human Resources Administration created JobStat for its welfare recipients. The Administration for Children's Services created ChildStat, in which they focused on reducing the problems of child abuse. So a number of New York City agencies took it on. Then it spread across the country. Other agencies did it. The next step was to the jurisdiction-wide level, where Baltimore became the first city or any jurisdiction to say, we're going to apply this strategy to every agency. And that was called CityStat. They chose to call it CityStat. And I guess the last iteration is at the federal level, where even before the GPRA Modernization Act required agencies to run quarterly performance reviews, HUD had created HUDstat, FEMA had created FEMAstat, and FDA had created FDA Track, all uses of the same basic strategy.
And I'd like to touch on those specific expressions of that same basic strategy. Could you give us maybe an overview of some of those CompStat, CityStat, StateStat, or other variants? And more particularly, what are the challenges that they faced and the successes that they've achieved? And then how are these expressions pushed Jack Maple's principles?
Well, I mean, Jack Maple had these four simple principles that meant a lot to him and others who were in NYPD, and it's not quite clear what they mean to anybody else. And that's what's made it a challenge, because people have to figure it out and figure it out for themselves. You can't take it from the police department to the Human Resources Administration doing welfare and just plop it into the organization. You have to adapt the basic understanding, the basic principles to the new circumstances, which requires you to understand what those underlying principles are. And I'd argue that those principles are really leadership behaviors. They are things that leaders do that motivate and drive people to accomplish particular public purposes by achieving specific results. And often we give people as a motivational tool a target to hit. If people have a target to hit, they're much more likely to focus their attention on it. Mm-hmm.
So, Bob, what are the core underlying principles and key operational features of an effective performance stat strategy? What do they have in common? And more particularly, what separates a real strategy from a pretender?
I would say of all the things that separates a real strategy from a pretender is where the leadership doesn't really care. The leadership's not engaged. They say, hey, you guys go do that, and we'll go pay attention to other things. If the leadership is really engaged in it, if they've made a commitment, we're going to produce these results, and we're going to get it done by this particular date, then everybody understands they take it seriously. Moreover, if they're spending their time on it, if they're actually investing their own most valuable resource, which is their time, then people will begin to take it seriously. I mean, people don't pay attention to your memos, and they don't listen to your speeches. If they want to know what you think's important, they pay attention to how you spend your time. So if you and your leadership team are showing up at the biweekly or the monthly or the quarterly performance reviews, people say, oh, that's interesting. They actually care. Maybe I should care too. And if they don't show up, pretty soon everybody's sending their top intern to the meeting.
Yeah, because they have the props, but they don't have the actual underlying leadership push. So, Bob, you mentioned earlier on that you view expressions of performance stat like CompStat or ChildStat or whatever stat not as a system or a model, but more so as a strategy. Why is it that a system or model is an inaccurate metaphor? Why is that?
Because it suggests a very mechanistic way of running an organization. The word system implies that there are these components, and if we put the components and the gears and the wheels together in the right way, and it's like an Erector set or a Lego thing, and then if it runs, because we put the system together, we don't have to worry about it anymore. Whereas people still want to know whether you care about it. Yeah, you paid attention last month. Are you paying attention again this month? And that's the nature of the leadership commitment. They are fully engaged in doing what I call a bunch of leadership behaviors, things that leaders do that either tell people what's to be accomplished or motivate people to accomplish them.
The other thing about when I was reading your book, the other thing I noticed about why that metaphor of the system doesn't work is because it's not mimical. You can't mimic it. I mean, you really have to understand, as you said, the underlying reasons for why you're there.
The word system also implies that there's explicit knowledge. There's some formula. Yeah, instead, it's the tacit knowledge. Okay, and so one of the things you have to do is go watch other people and figure it out. And don't just go once, go multiple times. Go to multiple places. Notice that even two police departments don't do it the same, let alone a child welfare agency versus a police department versus a welfare office versus an environmental agency or something.
Well, Bob, what prompted your interest in the stat phenomenon? Perhaps you could highlight for us certain research methods you employed.
The first thing that got me interested was learning about this thing existed. I'd always been interested in the challenge of improving the performance of public sector agencies. Okay, that was the sort of underlying research activity. It was over a decade ago. I went to my first CompStat meeting in Boston. I then went to my first CityStat meeting in Baltimore, and I said, this is pretty interesting. I wonder what these guys are really doing here. And so I began to visit different ones over basically a decade and looked at about three dozen different ones that were doing this. Sometimes I visited once, sometimes I visited multiple times, try to talk to as many people as possible, get a sense of what they thought it was, because not everybody had the same description. And then the real puzzle was, okay, but if all these people are doing this, why would we expect that this would actually have an impact on people? And so that's where I got to the stage of saying, okay, there are things that leaders do that basically make this work. Some of the things that leaders do are to make it really clear to the organization what we're trying to accomplish. And some of the things that leaders do motivate people to get it done. And if you listen to all the discussion about performance, most of it is built around the idea that we need to measure performance so that we can make better decisions. Nobody, or rarely, do people suggest that the use of data, that is, performance measures, can help actually motivate people to get it done. And so it's the motivational component of this that is often missed. And so what leadership is doing is not just merely measuring stuff, but it's actually trying to motivate people to get the next task done.
How is performance stat a leadership strategy for producing results? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. How can DoD improve its acquisition processes? Check out the latest IBM Center report, 8 Actions to Improve Defense Acquisition. The authors emphasize the urgency of acquisition reform in DoD, given budgetary constraints and security challenges, finding that DoD will need to gain every possible efficiency while resisting the temptation to buy defense on the cheap. This report continues the IBM Center's interest in better understanding and improving the federal government acquisition process. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professor Bob Bain, author of The Performance Stat Potential, a leadership strategy for producing results. So, Bob, why is it critical for a leadership team pursuing a stat strategy to start with specifying and defining their purpose? And what's the difference between a goal and a target?
Okay. If we don't have some sort of purpose, keep New York City safe, which was the original one, and pretty straightforward because most people prefer a safer city than a less safe city. And so there wasn't a lot of debate about the macro purpose. There was debate about whether cops could do anything about it. And there was basically a general consensus that cops didn't know what to do about crime. That if you called up and told the police that somebody committed a crime and you could give them some evidence, they would go arrest that person, but otherwise they didn't have any impact. And Bratton said, no, cops count. We're going to get this done. We're going to reduce crime. And so he not only said that, but he set a target. I'm going to reduce crime by 10% the first year. We're going to do it by 25%. Over 2 years, and we're going to do it by 40% over 3 years. Noticing he's not telling somebody else what to do. He's holding himself accountable for that outcome. So if you don't have a purpose, then you can do whatever you want, and I can do whatever we want, and we're all very happy. Leadership responsibility is to set out what the purpose is we're trying to accomplish.
And the second part of my question, you make a good distinction between, in this whole effort, if you have a goal versus a target, the target is less vague, right? I mean, is that correct?
Yeah. People use the word goal. We should have goals, okay? Now, a goal could be we should create international peace and harmony, or a goal should be we will cut crime by 10% this year. Now, notice that we can know whether New York City cut crime by 10%. We have a really hard time judging how much international peace and harmony got created. And so the important distinction about a target is a target is something to be completed, something specific to be completed by a particular time, and which we can generally all agree whether we did it or not. That there's some way to determine whether it was done. It might be counting number of crimes, or it could be getting a project up, but it's something that's got a specific result to be produced by a specific time. That's a target.
Okay. And Bob, you mentioned a term, performance deficit. What is that, and how can an organization identify key performance deficits?
Okay, so a performance deficit, at least as I use the phrase, is something along the value chain from inputs to activities and processes to outputs to outcomes that isn't quite working right, and we need to fix it. And it could be very early in the value chain. If we fix this, things will get better. And in fact, in a lot of organizations, what we do early in the value chain is much more critical because it affects everything else. And so we have to think about what performance deficit we need to fix next. I will give you a simple example. It doesn't come from a particular example of performance stat, but nevertheless illustrates it very clearly in an example that everybody can understand. This is Lowell, Massachusetts. It's an old mill town. The mills have long since gone away. The old buildings are occupied by immigrants. And I have told you probably enough for you to figure out what the test scores for the elementary and secondary schools are in this city. So what did the city decide to do? It decided that one of its key performance deficits was its truancy problem. Too many kids weren't in school. So they organized not just the schools and not just the police, but community organizations, parents. to get the kids in school. Some people have the responsibility for calling up well-known truants at 6 o'clock in the morning to get them out of bed and get them to school. So eventually they get kids into school, and as time goes on, with obviously a lag, test scores start going up. Now, the theory behind this isn't too complicated. Everybody who heard this story has figured it out. If the kids aren't in school, they aren't going to learn, or to the extent that they've learned anything, it's not what we want them to learn, but exactly what we don't want them to learn. So that's an example of a performance deficit that needs to be fixed. All organizations have them. It might be something early in the production process for a manufacturing firm. It might be something in the marketing strategy for a manufacturing firm. Everybody has these things that need to be fixed, and it's a leadership choice to identify them and decide which one to be fixed next.
And then employ the performance stat.
Yeah, and then get people to concentrate on that, set the target for it, hold the meetings, identify what progress we've made and what problems we still have to overcome, and then overcoming those problems by reporting back at the frequent integrated meetings that we're holding.
So switching gears just a little bit, giving more context, Bob, how does performance measurement differ from performance management? And why do you see these terms used so interchangeably?
I cannot answer why they're used interchangeably. Other people do. But it's clear that people talk about, well, we'll do performance measurement, we'll get the measures, and then wonderful things will happen. And, you know, I don't see that, because the measures just sort of sit there until somebody's responsible for making a change in some particular measure, whether it's truancy or whether it's crime or whether it's child protection or whether it's filling the potholes. Somebody's got to be responsible for getting it done. That's, again, why I use the phrase performance leadership, because I found too many people use the phrase performance management, but if you look at what they're really talking about, they're only talking about the measurement. They haven't figured out how to manage this.
So, Bob, in reading your book, you have to, in order to prove performance, data is necessary. And you point out the search for data is driven by two needs. What are they and why? And then what are some of the questions a leadership team pursuing a stat strategy would want their analytical staff to ask?
Well, obviously, one reason for getting data is to analyze what our current level of performance is. Answer the question, how well are we doing? Another reason, however, that is often neglected is to use the data to motivate people to improve performance. Obviously, in an organization that has multiple subunits, each unit doing the same thing, whether it's a police department or a series of welfare departments or whatever, one of the motivational uses of the data is to compare different organizations. Your organization's doing better than mine. Why is that? Now, I will, of course, try to explain that my organization is different. That's the standard, all-purpose bureaucratic excuse. You don't understand. We're different. But if the organization is large, if it's like New York City, which 20 years ago had 76 precincts. Today it has 77. You have 76 precincts. I can't get away with that excuse, because there's another precinct commander that's got the same type of problem that I have. And if she or he is doing better than me, I can't get away with the excuse. So the analytical part is trying to learn and make the improved decisions. The motivational part, which people tend to forget about. I mean, I've really been struck of the discussion of performance measurement almost always ignores the question of motivation and instead focuses on how do we make better decisions. But if we make better decisions and nobody does anything about it, it's not very, very helpful.
So, Bob, when preparing for a performance stat meeting, what are some of the advantages of not sharing the topics or specific questions that are going to be posed to the agency leader who's going to appear? And what's the drawback of doing that, and how do you avoid the gotcha game that some people have criticized these meetings to be?
Yeah, there's always this question of how much should we tell the reporting unit, okay? Should we tell them what we know and what the questions are going to be, or should we not? The theory behind not telling them is, hey, we got the data from them. the only way we got the data was to ask them to report what they were doing. And so they should know it as well as we do. Why haven't they looked at it? The second argument is that if we tell them what the questions are, they'll ignore all the ones what we haven't told them about. But if they don't know what the questions are, they're going to have to be prepared to understand their entire organization. You know, it's in my business, it would be like, oh, I'm going to tell you what questions are going to be on the final exam. The other side of it is, look, if the agency doesn't know what the questions are, it's going to spend all its time trying to understand what the questions are so that it doesn't spend its time doing something else. I think one of the issues is, how do you make this not some special add-on activity, but part of the regular rhyme and rhythm of what the organization does? And if that's the case, then people should be analyzing their own data. It's not just that the central performance staff, analytics staff, is analyzing data. Whether it's the precinct commanders or sanitation units or whatever, they have to know what their data tells them and be able to say, oh, well, we've got this problem, we've identified it, and here's what our strategy is to fix it. But it's an ongoing tension. Obviously, the reporting agencies, reporting units would love to be told what the questions are. It makes their life a lot easier. It may be that there are a lot of issues that ought to come up at the meeting, not just two.
So, Bob, how can a performance stat meeting or strategy facilitate the creation of, say, a learning organization? And to what extent do these meetings, performance stat meetings that we've talked about, represent a learning opportunity for the organization?
Unfortunately, the way the world has learned most about CompStat, let alone any of the other versions, is by watching The Wire, where the dominant mode of performance is to beat up aggressively on any slightly unperforming precinct commander or other cop. There's no learning going on there. But, in fact, we want people to understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, how it's working, and be able to tell other schools or other sanitation units or other precincts or whatever how they're getting it done. And it just depends on how the leadership team chooses to run the meeting. Are they giving people the opportunity not only to have to explain why something isn't working, but also to explain why something is, particularly in front of their peers, so the rest of their peers can try to adapt the same strategy to their own organization?
So, Bob, would you elaborate on the importance of carrying out feedback and follow-up in order to contribute to the success of any performance stat effort? And given your research and your experience, what's the best way to communicate the substance of each meeting throughout the organization?
On the feedback question, it really helps to have visited more than one meeting. If you go to one meeting, all you see is this, and you don't know what went before. I often say it's like pick somebody giving you a novel and saying, please read pages 95 to 110 and tell me what's going on. You have no idea what went before. And the same is true when you show up at one meeting. You don't know who the people are. The jargon is whizzing over your head, and you're trying to figure out what's going on. In fact, however, a well-run meeting, people are referencing what came at the last meeting and the meeting a month ago and the meeting 6 months ago, because it's not just, oh, what should we worry about now? There's a common set of themes about what results we're trying to produce, what our performance deficits are, what our targets are, and how well we're doing against those. So specific people have to be able to explain how this relates to what happened before. And the dilemma for a visitor, and I know it was true for me the first time I go to almost any of these examples, I can't figure out what's going on because I don't know the history. But if I go back the second time, and I see the same organizations again, the same subunits again, I will recognize the continuity. If, however, you let the agency, the reporting unit, set the agenda, They'll set a different agenda every time, and there will be no continuity.
Given your research and what you – was there certain best practices or best way to communicate the outcomes or the discussion of that particular meeting to the general organization?
I think it depends on the nature of the organization, and it depends upon the nature of the communication vehicles within the organization, okay? But there's lots of ways that it happens. Obviously, the leadership of the unit that's reporting is going to go back and say, okay, we did pretty well on this thing, but we didn't do well on other things. I know a director of Baltimore's Department of Parks and Recreation who said, I bring my full leadership team, 24 people to the meetings because I want them to hear it straight from the mayor and the mayor's leadership team. I don't want them to think that I'm inventing this. And so that means that all of a sudden I got 24 people in my organization who understand what the message is. And when they deal with their subordinates, when their staff, they will be conveying something that's similar to what I'm conveying and what the other units are conveying.
So, Bob, drawing on your experience and research, have any of these performance stats really worked? And can you attribute an improved results to performance stat efforts?
No. There's no...
Surprising answer.
There's no controlled experiment you run. New York would be a perfect place. We will run CompStat for 38 precincts, and we will not run CompStat for 38 other precincts and see what happens. Well, there's a couple problems with that. One is that crime isn't limited to a particular precinct. You know, the crooks don't notice that there's a precinct boundary drawn down the middle of the street, and therefore we will commit crimes here rather than there. The more important thing is, though, because this is an idea, you can't deny it to people. You're on the treatment group and you're going to CompStat and I'm not. But I've observed that you're doing some things. And I say, well, I think I'm as good as Michael. Why can't I do that too? And so you can't run the standard controlled experiment. And so what I've done here is tried to look at things that we know from behavioral literature, both individual behavior and organizational behavior, about how people behave under certain circumstances. And so my list of leadership behaviors is based on both what I observe people doing, how people reacted, but also what we know about human and organizational psychology.
What are the core leadership principles and key operational components of this leadership strategy? We will explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. Government leaders and managers face major challenges today, including fiscal austerity, citizen expectation, the pace of technology and innovation, and a new role for governance. These challenges influence how government executives lead today, but more importantly, how they can be prepared for tomorrow. The IBM Center report, Six Trends Driving Change in Government, offers a path forward for government executives responding to the ever-increasing complexity and challenges they face today. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professor Bob Bain, author of The Performance Stat Potential, A Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. So, Bob, would you tell us more about the evolution of Performance Stat from version, say, 1.0 to its current iteration?
Well, the first thing that people try to do is, okay, let's do what we're supposed to be doing right. Let's pick up the garbage right. Let's arrest the bad guys right. Whatever it is, we aren't doing it right. The version 2 is more about how we can improve those formal processes. How could we do it differently? How could we pick up the trash differently? Let's not just focus on running the routes properly, which we weren't doing before, maybe. And now let's figure out how we redesign the routes. And, you know, some people, operation research ways of doing that, but also frontline workers know something about that as well. Performance Stats 3.0 is more about how can we think differently about what results we're trying to produce and how we're trying to produce them. So this is much more long-term. It's much more getting into analyzing purpose, where purpose is more than just picking up the garbage. Purpose is more about how does that relate to having a community that people want to live in? What is it about picking up the garbage right that helps people want to be part of our community? And I think you can't do that third stage until you've gone through one, and I don't think you can do two until you've gone through one either. You got to go one, let's just get what we're supposed to be doing right. Two, let's redesign what we're supposed to be doing so it makes more sense. And then three, let's think about how we achieve our purpose a little better and maybe even change our purpose or maybe bring more than one line unit together to help us achieve our purpose. Okay? Lots of people want to jump to the top of the performance mountain right away. Oh, we should improve performance. Let's get there right tomorrow. The story I tell is about my son and I standing at the bottom of Tuckerman's Ravine in New Hampshire in the White Mountains, and he was pretty young then, and he looks up, we're going up to the hut, Lake of the Clouds hut, and he looks up and says, I'm not going to make that. And I look up and say, wow, it's a long way, though I don't tell him. And we made it, but we didn't jump. We made it one step at a time, and that's what you got to do here. And people can't say, oh, well, I could just get there tomorrow, because you got to bring your organization along. They have to believe that they can get it done. They have to recognize when they've been successful and say, okay, now that we've been successful, maybe we can be successful again at the next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have an interesting chapter, Bob, on establishing responsibilities plus discretion. And what I want to understand is, to what extent does performance stats shift responsibility for action from an organization to, say, an individual? How important is it to get specific individuals to accept that responsibility? And is this a dynamic between enforcing accountability while improving performance?
First comment is, we decided a century ago with the progressive movement that we were going to get corruption out of the public sector. And we were going to do that by having specific rules. This is how you hired people. This is how you did procurement. And we took discretion away from people. Discretion was bad. And in fact, if your jurisdiction, country, province, state, city, whatever, hasn't solved the corruption problem, and by that I don't mean eliminate it, go to zero, but if it isn't significantly under control, you can't use this strategy to improve performance, because this strategy relies on people who both know the local conditions and will be the ones who get it done. They're smarts to get it done. So we say, okay, precinct commander, your job is to reduce crime in your precinct. We don't know, sitting in one police plaza or police department headquarters anywhere, how to do it in your precinct. We're going to give you the discretion. We're going to make sure you have the resources to get it done. And then we're going to say, report back to us on how well you're doing. And when you report back, you might say, look, we've made this progress so far. We got this problem. We have this resource. Here's what we need to do. And the meeting is about solving that problem. But if you don't have the corruption under control, then people just hire their cousins and spend the money and use the discretion badly. But yes, there's a different level, different type of accountability. It's not accountability for following the rules. It's accountability for producing results. But you can't hold people accountable for producing results if they don't have the discretion necessary to make the adjustments, if they just have to follow the rules.
So, Bob, your book, you have a wonderful quote by Michael Pugliani noting that we can know more than we can tell. And yet you point out that humans yearn for simple explanations that can be encapsulated in simple strategies based on explicit knowledge, while complex strategies require tacit knowledge. And it's this distinction between, or the juxtaposition between, tacit and explicit knowledge. What are the challenges of understanding and explaining tacit knowledge, and how does this insight relate to those seeking to pursue a successful performance strategy?
One of the insights is it might help to read my book, but that's not good enough, because I am trying to convey this tacit knowledge in an explicit format. Explicit knowledge can be conveyed in words and blueprints and formulas, things that people can follow explicitly. But tacit knowledge has to be adapted to the purpose and circumstances of whatever organization is that's going to make use of it. So people have to understand what's really going on, and that's why going to visit a couple of these things, so you actually see one in action. You can talk with the people beforehand, you can talk with the people afterwards, and you can come back to the next meeting and see what progress has been made. An example I use in the book is they tried an experiment in Scotland using the city-stat strategy, and to do that, they sent people to Baltimore. And I was struck when I was in Scotland talking to them and say, gee, you guys figured this out. How did you do that? Well, they didn't send somebody to watch one meeting for an hour. They sent a team to investigate Baltimore for a week. These people talked to the agencies, they talked to the staff, they watched some meetings, they sent somebody to Somerville, Massachusetts to find out how they did it. They absorbed themselves in the activity so that they could figure out what the tacit knowledge was and how they would make it work in a obviously very different set of circumstances. So one of the challenges that I had was to try to figure out how I can convey those sets of ideas in a format where people are going to read, but I would encourage anybody that was going to use this strategy to go visit, probably see two of different ones and see each one of them twice.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you also have another insight in your book regarding the performance stat efforts, and that is naming is not the same as knowing. Would you elaborate on this insight and describe for us the difference between naming and knowing as relates to those who are pursuing performance stat leadership strategy?
You know, lots of people say, well, we're doing CompStat. And what does that mean? Well, we've watched The Wire, and we know there was actually a journalist who criticized an academic for not having watched The Wire to figure out how it worked. Honest. You know, you can have a name for something, but still not knowing how it worked, okay? So people use the word CompStat all the time. Does that mean that they understand how it really functions? Could they describe it to somebody, or are they simply going to give you, it's a bunch of data talked about at meetings, or some sort of shorthand, it's an accountability mechanism. Okay? Which means it beats up on people. It's a much more complicated thing than that. And any leadership strategy is a much more complicated thing than that. Any management approach is much more complicated. And so a lot of the problem in any discussion of management or leadership is that it consists of a bunch of simple aphorisms that nobody can find anything wrong with, but you don't know when it really applies or how you would apply it.
Well, Bob, just to talk about more of the exteriors, what facilities and technologies are needed in support of, say, a performance strategy to improve performance?
You don't need very much. You need a small staff. People are analysts, but they're not econometricians. They're people who can look at things, understand what's going on, and make some suggestions for improvement. They obviously have to be able to handle data, but any college graduate now can do Excel, and so that's pretty straightforward. You then need some equipment to project stuff on a wall or a screen, and you need a room, but you don't need a special room. You don't need a special room like NYPD. In Los Angeles, while they were building a new police station, they were running their weekly CompStat meetings every Wednesday morning at a Furniture Mart. They would rent a room. The staff would show up, set up the computers, set up the screens, set up the tables. Everybody would come in. They'd hold a meeting. At the end of three areas, they would take all the stuff down, take it home, and come back next week, okay? Some people have very formal rooms. Other people just use a standard conference room. Not very much magic. The cost, that is the dollar cost, is minimum. The cost in terms of the leadership time is significant, and that's what people don't get when they ask the cost question.
What does the future hold for the performance staff potential as a leadership strategy? We will explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors, returns. In a world inundated with all kinds of information, timely, relevant, and more predictive data can drive better decision-making. Law enforcement agencies are at the forefront in leveraging data and using innovative software to generate predictions that help police prevent crime. What is predictive policing? How can using analytics make us safer? Check out the IBM Center report, Predictive Policing, Preventing Crime with Data and Analytics by Jen Bochner, and find out. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. What do agency leaders need to know about the federal acquisition process? What are some of the key federal procurement trends? And how can agency leaders overcome today's acquisition challenges? Check out the new Center report, A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition by Trevor Brown, and find out. The report offers practical recommendations for improving federal acquisition. Download your free copy of A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professor Bob Bain, author of The Performance Stat Potential, a Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. So, Bob, organizations can change remarkably fast when the right conditions are in place. And in your book, The Performance Stat Potential, you identify four conditions that can make change possible. Could you tell us about those?
Yeah, basically, the organization needs some competences. You can't just do this in any organization. If the organization doesn't have some things that it needs to get it done, the leadership team has to provide it. The first organizational competence is, I would argue, is a results-focused mindset, that we are focused on actually accomplishing specific purposes. Second is, do we have an analytical bent? Some people are very analytical. They can look at data or other forms of information and try to learn from that. So it's an analytical learning capacity that any organization needs to build. Also, there's a diversity of leadership roles. There's a variety of things that leaders do. Henry Mintzberg from McGill identified a list of them and says, look, managers do a whole bunch of different things. They provide information. They make decisions. They function as a figurehead. And he gave several examples. We need those leadership roles throughout the organization, whether it's a jurisdiction or a subunit within a jurisdiction. And then I just would also emphasize that, therefore, you got to spend some time helping people who don't have those competences develop them. Can we run, as they did in New York at the Administration for Children's Services, a leadership academy to train people? People who started out as welfare workers, had they gone to college and learned analytical techniques? Maybe not. Maybe they were forced to take the statistics degree because that was a requirement to get their social welfare graduate degree, but that was not why they went into this business. Well, if we're going to move them from being not just frontline social workers, but the supervisors and managers of frontline social workers, we have to give them some training. And then the last organizational competence is purpose-driven persistence. Are we going to be persistent? Are we going to focus on a purpose? It's not just persistence, but persistence for a particular purpose, persistence for a particular result. And if people have those, they are much more likely to be successful.
So, Bob, your book's subtitle is A Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. And you identify or outline 16 leadership behaviors that can facilitate a performance stat strategy. Would you highlight, say, the initial four behaviors and how adopting them can contribute to better results?
Okay. I think it's important here to distinguish, there are 16 items, okay? And we're obviously going to cover those. The first four are more about focusing people on what's to be accomplished, and the last dozen are more about motivating to do that. So the first one is simply repeating and repeating what we're trying to accomplish anyway, making it really clear that everybody in the organization understands what our job is. Now, the problem is, the first time you say it, people say, oh, that's really nice, and they forget about it. And the second time they say it, oh, yeah, they send it again, oh, that's interesting. And so you got to make it really clear, and you got to repeat and repeat and repeat, because people don't take you seriously until you've repeated it. A second is looking at the data to determine what your performance deficits are that you have to fix next. Analyzing the data tells us what we should do next. Creating targets tells people, ah, this is what we're going to have to accomplish by this particular time. And then the fourth leadership behavior is making assignments. Don't only have a target, but have people who have specific assignments to do specific things so that target will get achieved.
And as a follow-up, you highlight, perhaps you can highlight a few of the remaining 12 behaviors. And more particularly, how are they designed to motivate individuals? Maybe there are a couple that you would want to talk about.
Okay, well, a simple one I'll talk about is distributing comparative data. Nothing gets a meaning to pay more attention than a bar chart in which people see, oh, that guy's really good. Look at how tall that bar is. Oh, that person isn't doing so well. Oh, I'm in the middle. It compares people, and most people like to be better than other people. And so particularly if you have a bar chart with a line that's the target, and if you're above the line, you're successful, and you're below the line, you're not. And that means that everybody can be successful because we want everybody to be above the line. Two others I'll just quickly mention. One is devoting time. People pay attention. If you are paying attention yourself and spending your precious time on it, they won't if you aren't. Recognizing accomplishments and reproving the recalcitrant are important. When people accomplish something, they need to be recognized for it. I'm not talking about fantastic performance bonuses. I'm talking about making it really clear to the organization that this unit has done an outstanding job and we recognize them for it. And then for those people who aren't part of the team, who have refused to play, one of the simple ways of reproving them is simply to ask them the question again. Last time we asked you how well you were doing on hitting your target, could you give us an update? Can you give us an update? Can you give us an update? Everybody gets it. This team it's an embarrassing question to be asked in front of your peers, your subordinates, and your superiors, because everybody understands exactly why you're being asked that question. And I guess I just end by saying, don't forget to be persistent.
So to realize the performance stat potential, why does pursuing performance leadership require a dangerous commitment from public sector executives?
Well, it requires dangerous commitment from all executives, except the public sector executives have a target that's much more public, that's apt to be on the front page. We're saying, oh, we have to accomplish this by then. And oops, if we don't do it, if people will say, aha, you couldn't get it done. So the dangerous commitment is setting the target. And at the same time, without the target, you won't accomplish much. I mean, if Bratton had said, okay, year one, we're going to reduce crime by 2%, they wouldn't have hit 10%, right? So you have to figure out what the balance is between the outrageous target and the achievable target. And your organization will tell you that what's achievable is a lot less than what you think is achievable. And so you have to be prepared to push your organization a little bit. But doing that in a way that could be reported on the front page is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. So, Bob, how perhaps eventually can we modify a performance stat leadership strategy to create a cross-agency or even cross-jurisdictional collaboration that helps produce better results?
I think you have to start with doing it in the stovepipes. You can't do it collaboratively until you've learned to do it in the stovepipes. Learning to do it in the stovepipes is a lot easier than learning to do it collaboratively. So don't, again, try to jump to the top of the performance mountain. Take the steps one at a time, okay? Can we fill the potholes? If we can't fill the potholes, we aren't going to be able to, you know, which requires one crew to fill this set of potholes by the end of this day. Not a technologically complicated task, not an operationally complicated task. If we can't do that, we're not going to be able to do the collaborative stuff that requires people to get together, figure out who's supposed to do what and stuff like that. They won't believe they can't get it done. They won't have the performance mindset. So that's why building the performance mindset helps you get to the stage where you can have collaboration.
So it's a real maturation.
Yeah. Okay. You got to bring the organization along because the organization has been doing quite well. Thank you very much. We're working really, really hard, and but we can't work any harder. And the challenge is to get people to think about working smarter and how do we do that.
So, Bob, what does the future hold in this area?
That's not obvious because the cost that the leadership can't figure out at the beginning is their own time. And so to the extent that they have to invest their time in it, it does tend to flounder. People, oh, really? Oh, gosh. Well, do we really have to hold another meeting this week? I would argue that one of the things that's important is to maybe make sure that you have a chief operating officer, whether that person's called that or not, who basically does the internal management, runs the performance stat meetings. That was true certainly in Baltimore, where the first deputy mayor ran the meetings. It's true in Somerville, Massachusetts, where Joe Curtatone has said on numerous occasions, Joe Curtatone being the mayor, has said on numerous occasions, my director of summer stat speaks for me. If you can do that, that means that the mayor can spend things that mayors have to do and only the mayor can do while somebody else is chief operating officer and everybody recognizes his or her authority to run the organization.
That's a wonderful way to end our conversation. I want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule, Bob, to join us today.
Thank you for being interested in the book and actually reading it.
This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Professor Bob Bain, author of The Performance Stat Potential, a Leadership Strategy for Producing Results. Professor Bain is also an author of two IBM Center reports, one on Baltimore City Stat and one on performance leadership. You can order or download a free copy of either report at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, an in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.
What factors contribute to Austria's low rates of unemployment? How does Austria's dual educational system factor into it? What can be learned from innovations being pursued in Austria? Join Michael Keegan for the inaugural Global Conversations with Leaders series as he explores these questions and more with Dr. Johann Kopf, Managing Director, Austrian Public Employment Service. Tune in on Mondays at 11 a.m. for the Business of Government Hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.